the library issued the list of positions that they are seeking to incentivize, as they call it. Some of those positions are in our bargaining unit, and some, frankly, are in management, and some are in the other units. So we haven't really broken it down yet, but I think probably, and this is just a guess, for the entire agency, it's a little bit over 1,000 are eligible.
Little over 1,000 eligible. Do you know how many the library is targeting? How many people do they want to take the buyouts?
Well, the targeted number for the total positions are about 349. In other words, if that figure is correct, and I'm not sure of 1,000, it would mean that there are more people that may be eligible in a given position. If you look at the agreement that we have, the three unions signed with the library, in the event that more people apply for one of these opportunities and submit an application, and they have to choose, they'll generally use the seniority principle. But I must say, it's not clear that that even the 349 positions will, in fact, people in there will, in fact, go for this. No one knows.
Any word on how much this would save the library?
No. Nobody's thrown that around. Nobody has talked to us about that. One of the things is that this is a voluntary separation as opposed to something like a RIF, which would be an involuntary separation. And this is, to me, the sad part about this. This is a little bit less than 10% of our staff, assuming that all 350 positions are let's say, filled, but they're incentivized and people leave. It does reduce the efficiency of the Library of Congress, which is the nation's oldest cultural institution and is loved by just about everybody here on Capitol Hill and around the nation and even the world. But in terms of saving money, money could be saved by a furlough, for example. But this is a case where actually these positions probably will not be backfilled. So it's actually going to reduce the number of positions at the Library of Congress. So in that sense of the word, it has the same effect as the RIF.
The Library of Congress, in the document sent to employees, says that additional or substantial adjustments to all of this are possible, depending on what actually happens with the budget on Capitol Hill. How substantial and how likely do you think that is?
Well, my understanding is that OPM gave the library, permitted the library to offer early outs through 2012, the end of the fiscal year in October. But the VSIP, the buyouts, which were granted by the Congress, only extend for this particular round. One of the things about voluntary separations, it helps the agency more if these are offered in the beginning of the fiscal year. I mean, imagine, I'll just throw out a figure, if a federal employee has a $100,000 or $125,000 package with benefits and everything else, and it's funded from October 1st on through the fiscal year, if the buyout is successful as far as the library is concerned and the employee leaves within the first 2 months, and that's the way these are scheduled, then essentially they save that money for the remainder of the year. So it's unlikely, it just seems to me, that the library would offer these sometime in later on in the year. If they, because they wouldn't be saving as much money, if you get my point. On the other hand, they may, but they would have to go back and seek approval from the Congress for that.
Now, Congress is looking for more ways to save money. Any concern that these cost-cutting efforts, for example, the Super Committee, going to spur more of this at the Library of Congress and maybe even other federal agencies?
Well, my understanding is, we're in the legislative branch of government here, and so we're different. And so that could be a good thing or a bad thing. And in this particular case, we're closer to our appropriation committees, which really drove this. There's a 6.4% reduction that the House passed for the Library of Congress for the next fiscal year. So that's pretty substantial. But my understanding is that even the executive branch, they're talking about reducing the workforce by 10%. Now that's an appropriation matter. Whether or not federal employees get their benefits cut in other ways, moving to high five, from high three to high five, or increasing our contributions to our FERS or or anything like that that might be determined by the super committee or anyone else, what effect that would have on a federal employee, whether they will stay or not, is unclear. So that's part of the uncertainty, you know, of being a federal worker in today's world.
How did the Library of Congress approach you about this, and what was your initial reaction?
We do have three unions here at the Library, of which we're the largest, and we've had a relationship here for well over 30 years. And they, I have to say, on this go-around, they've been very open and transparent with us, because I think, and I'm just speaking for the Guild now, we do have a certain mutuality of interest, and as far as our organization, our union is concerned, voluntary separations are much preferable than involuntary separations. I have to say, duh, when I say that. But the fact that they would offer this to employees who, we have an older workforce here at the library. I think we have a much older workforce than, say, the rest of the federal government. We have a number of people who are eligible to retire. And so being able to give them a push is something that we would prefer. RIFs are very painful and time-consuming and messy, you know, for employees because they're put on a 90-day watch. They don't know if they're going to end up on their feet, if they're going to end up out on the street. And they're just messy affairs, right? And so I think that we, sad day that it is for the library because it's reducing its workforce under the circumstances. As a federal employee union, this was the best alternative. And so we decided to work with the library. And I think we have a good agreement, by the way, that makes it very transparent and helpful to employees who consider or are considering this.
What kinds of layoff protections do you have in your contract with the library, and how would that work?
I'm glad you asked that. Because we have collective bargaining here, and this is especially critical for us because we're in the legislative branch, so we don't follow necessarily the rules and regs that the executive branch follows. So we have union protection here. We have a very, very good reduction in force article in our contract, and we have had, at least in my tenure as president of the Guild, which is since 1998, we have had here at the library about 20, in our unit, 25 or 30 RIFs, and so we've been through that article, and we adhere to it on our end very strictly, including filing grievances should the library either inadvertently or purposely violate that article. So an employee that would go through, and we have a good RIF article that would be go through that process, would have the protection not only of the union contract for the reduction in force procedures, but it would be backed up by a grievance procedure that goes to an outside arbitrator, which is binding on the library, which is very good. Now, someone else told me recently that a person in the Defense Department is fearful that they may get RIF'd, and they don't have union protection, and they're kind of in the dark about all of this, right? And they're afraid that they'll simply just find out one day and say, oh, here comes the RIF. So if it comes to that, we're here, and we'll go into a different playing field. I hope it doesn't come to that. But if it does, we'll just shift gears like all federal unions do and go on to another game that we'll play.
Now, the library in those documents have mentioned briefing sessions and retirement counseling for people who are eligible. What can you tell me about that?
Well, I think that's important. I think a lot of federal employees, one reason federal employees may not retire, even those that are eligible, is the uncertainty factor. And so being able to allow employees and, in fact, assist them in making an informed choice about what's really a personal decision and for many people a complex one, is important. So having a briefing, posting frequently asked questions, being able to make a one-on-one interview, have a one-on-one interview with a retirement counselor, and they have hired other counselors here for this go-around of buyouts and early outs. It allows a federal worker who may have questions about everything from health insurance to life insurance to when will I get my first annuity to what will my annuity be, all of these things that would be helpful in a briefing and especially in a one-on-one counseling, kind of eases the way for an employee to make a decision. I do understand just from watching the news and reading all the emails that There's a lot of federal workers in agencies right now who are not retiring because of the uncertainty, and also because, frankly, the erosion of salaries and retirement opportunities and conditions of employment in the private sector and around our society. Federal workers' jobs now are very stable and secure. And so I think we're all feeling that. And so the question is, well, why would we retire, right? And what happens after we retire? And so I think that what's good about this process of early out and buyout is that a lot of people are going to be educated by it and are going to, at least for those of us that are pension eligible, as they say, to begin looking seriously about retirement as an option, maybe even possibly a little bit sooner than we had hoped for. And maybe that's a good thing. You know, maybe that's a good thing. I know I'm telling people here to make sure to look at the website for the National Association of Retired Federal Employees, because we're going to need some help even after we retire from the federal government.